Good afternoon. This is KTOO, and I'm Clarice Larson. Cruise ship passengers who arrive at Juneau's farthest dock may not have to trek as far to get to downtown in the coming years. On Monday, the Juneau Assembly approved leasing a downtown waterfront property and tidelands near where the Seawalk currently ends by port. Petro Marine Services owns the property. City Manager Katie Kester says the lease is needed to finally connect all of Juneau's cruise ship docks.
This ordinance is a really important piece in extending the Seawalk all the way to the AJ dock.
Right now, the AJ dock is isolated from the rest of the other cruise ships. So visitors who get dropped off there have to shuttle into town or walk roughly 10 minutes through an industrial area to get there. The proposed Seawalk extension would allow them to walk directly to downtown along the waterfront. The city has long planned to develop a continuous mile-and-a-half-long path from the Douglas Bridge to AJ Dock. The city has extended the Seawalk in sections over the years, and this new section will stretch a quarter mile south toward Thane. The city will pay $75,000 annually to lease the property, which will be paid for using marine passenger fees. That's the tax the city collects from cruise ship passengers who arrive in port. The lease was approved for 35 years. At the meeting, some residents testified in support, but not everyone was on board with the plan. Auk Bay resident Heather Marlowe questioned whether the extension was needed, given the high cost. She suggested widening the sidewalks that visitors currently use.
We keep the long-term vision of extending the Seawalk to the rock dump as a long-term vision. We're not there yet. If you get another cruise ship and you have true demand at the rock dump, we can fulfill the vision later.
City officials estimate the total price tag of the extension project will likely cost $20 to $25 million, and construction is still likely a few years out. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson. Good afternoon. I'm Clarice Larson, and you're listening to KTOO. The union representing most Juneau Police Department staff has declared an impasse in its negotiations for a new contract with the city and borough of Juneau. Juneau Police Sergeant Sterling Salisbury is the chapter president for the Public Safety Employees Association. He says low pay and staffing shortages are stretching the department beyond its limits, and it's putting the public at risk.
What we're saying is they need to make it a place where people want to come to Juneau and to recruit and retain officers and dispatchers. And under their current proposals to us, it's not even coming close.
The union and city have been negotiating a new contract since February. The previous contract expired in June. The union declared an impasse earlier this month. Salisbury says Juneau's wages aren't competitive with other departments and agencies in the state. He says that, paired with severe understaffing, is driving people away from the department. Right now, the department has 11 vacant positions, which is fewer than last year. But Salisbury said it's not enough, since many officers are still in training. He says the lack of officers has led to delayed response times, strained investigations, and mandatory overtime. He says better pay and benefits are needed to attract and retain staff. Juneau Police Chief Derek Boss agreed with Salisbury that understaffing is a challenge, but he said that the department is making strides to address it. He said the department currently has 8 officers in training.
We are definitely doing a robust effort with recruiting and hiring, and that is making a difference. We are making headway, beyond just breaking even between attrition. We're now in a forward number, so I think that is helping.
Juneau's firefighting union is also negotiating with the city. Union representatives said that low staffing rates could also impact response times. And after nearly a decade finessing her craft, artist Sydney Akagi is eager to introduce Sitkins to Raven's Tale and Chilkat weaving at the most recent Native Arts Resident at the Sheldon Jackson Museum. KCAW's Ryan Cotter spoke with Akagi on her artistic journey and what knowledge and skills Sitkins can expect to receive from her tenure.
Back when she was an art manager at the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute in 2017, Sydney Akagi would frequently spot people using weaving kits. Inspired by the weaving surrounding her, she scored a spot in Raven's Tail and Chilkat weaver Lily Hope's class, and Akagi was hooked.
Weaving felt pretty almost addictive at first. I couldn't stop. I was up late at night. I'd be sitting in bed with tiny projects and wouldn't go to sleep. And I kind of just lost time.
Since then, Akagi continued to study under Hope's tutelage as an apprentice in Juneau, mastering the intricate finger-twining steps of Raven's tail weaving and the geometric designs of the Chilkat style. As her skills improved, Akagi says she was able to find healing and empowerment in her own Tlingit identity.
I think it started to kind of heal some maybe cultural things, a little bit of cultural trauma that I had had from growing up and not feeling accepted and kind of keeping my culture kind of like just at bay and not fully accepting it. So it was kind of like my gateway into having that healing with my culture.
With Hope's encouragement, Akagi quit her job at the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute in 2020 to pursue weaving full-time. Now, with nearly a decade of weaving under her belt, she is excited to share her knowledge with Sitkins as the current Native Artist Resident at the Sheldon Jackson Museum. There, visitors can witness a killer whale Chilkat tunic Akagi completed in 2023. The tunic immediately snatches your attention when you enter the Sheldon Jackson Museum, with its vibrant yellows and blues blasting through its black and white borders to define the whale's geometric shapes. The tunic's design mirrors itself on either side in what is known as a distributive design. The tunic is a recreation of one Akagi observed at the Anchorage Museum back in 2022, in order to learn how to weave a traditional tunic.
There's not very many weavers that understand the process of creating the shoulders on that tunic, so it felt more almost 3D versus the flat surface of like a robe that's hanging on a loom. So what I really wanted to do was understand that shoulder, the techniques of creating that and that construction.
Next to the tunic is one of Akagi's works in progress, a black wall of thread with diamonds swimming across a budding yellow line below it, across her weaving loom. These initial threads will eventually culminate into a Chilkat robe depicting a salmon. This robe is unique in that unlike Akagi's previous pieces, like the distributive killer whale tunic, this one will have a configurative design, or an asymmetrical design, across the piece.
So I might be a little anxious before starting that and just having that understanding, but again, that I think that's part of my evolution as a Chilkat weaver and like understanding that and gaining all that knowledge.
The salmon robe was inspired by Akagi's experience as a resident of the Taku River near Juneau and her advocacy work fighting mining companies whose wastewater endangers the health of the river's salmon.
So I was kind of trying to figure out how the art I make, what I could make to kind of bring in a more traditional conversation to these conversations I've been having with these CEOs and presidents of these mining companies to ask them to respect our rivers and to do the cleanup.
Akagi says the work she does, both on her loom and as an advocate for environmental justice, is connected.
Every part of what I'm creating is from the earth, and so not protecting the earth only affects what I am creating.
In addition to a lecture, as part of her residency, Akagi will lead a sold-out weaving workshop where participants can create their very own keychains. Akagi is excited to introduce students to the wide variety of benefits weaving has to offer.
For kids, weaving can be used as a hands-on method to teach math. There's pattern recognition. For anybody older, just understanding how to do this and use your hands, and even for the cultural reason of being able to connect with the culture or understand the culture. I think there's so many things that anybody can benefit from learning about weaving.
Amidst the chaos of balancing numerous other weaving projects with navigating grants and family life, Akagi is grateful to be present in Sitka and engage with the community, exchanging ideas like two threads being woven together to create something meaningful. In Sitka, I'm Ryan Cotter.
And South Central Alaska residents who bought air filters, face masks, and dog goggles in preparation for the potential eruption of Mount Spur can breathe a sigh of relief. Alaska volcano observers yesterday moved the alert level on Spur from the yellow advisory status to a green normal status, indicating an extremely low chance of an eruption. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early reports.
Spur began to exhibit signs of a likely eruption in March. That's when officials with the Alaska Volcano Observatory noticed an increase in volcanic gases emitting from the volcano and an uptick in earthquake activity at the base. At the time, scientists estimated an eruption could occur within weeks or months.
Of course, after we said that, the volcano had a different plan for us.
Dave Schneider is a research geophysicist with the Alaska Volcano Observatory in Anchorage. He says magma actually started moving around beneath Spur in spring of 2024, eventually leading to the gas emissions scientists observed a year later. But a steady decline in small quakes, gas emissions, and melting ice since March have scientists confident that the magma flow has stopped.
There just wasn't enough supply to really push it up to the surface. And at the time, everything was pointing up. And since that time, things have stalled. And now we're seeing a volcano that looks like it's going back to sleep.
Spur is the closest active volcano to the state's largest population center. And the announcement that it's settled down comes after months of uncertainty. Large communities like Anchorage and smaller villages like Tyonek, only 40 miles from Spur, prepared for potential impacts from ashfall, include concerns over ash cleanup, aviation safety, and potential respiratory issues. Schneider says it was heartening to see local governments working together to plan for the worst.
I think that this has been a good learning experience on preparedness for a lot of people, that we do live in a place that's geologically and meteorologically active. I mean, Alaska is not for wimps.
And for residents who went out and bought things like air filters and N95 masks, Schneider says they're good to hold on to in the event of another potential eruption or could be used for other purposes. Yes, even the dog goggles.
If you're recreating in places where there's a lot of wind-blown silt, like in the Matanuska Valley, I mean, that's not good for your dog's eyes either. So I look forward to seeing some very stylish dogs, and I'll stop and talk to each one of them, because that's what I do.
Though chances of an eruption are extremely low, officials say that hazardous amounts of carbon dioxide may be emitting from Crater Peak, an opening about 2 miles away from Spur, and could pose a risk to people recreating nearby. However, the risk does not extend to nearby communities. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
This is KTOL. Thank you so much for tuning in.